faculty.
Well, I think I was a chairman. I would say that Larry McEnany was as much a leader as I was.
Yes, I had a wonderful interview with him.
Well, that's good.
I did interview him, and it was really fun. He told me all about going down to Alabama and about the early physics lab and what it looked like. And that's kind of, you know, what I wanted.
You're going to have to deal with his being very self-effacing.
I know. That's a
problem. And also, I want to say how much I loved John and Frances Abbott, and how much John Abbott meant to this community, mm-hmm. because he brought alive history. Well, I'm going to butt out, but
okay.
Anyway, history of Edwardsville that Edwardsvillians didn't know.
Yes.
I lived my first 6 years in LeClaire, and mm-hmm. I didn't know that history. My parents knew Nelson Lawnon, who's the son-in-law of,
N.O. Nelson.
N.O. Nelson. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know any of that until John Abbott came. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, he was so smart, Ellen, because, well, I mean, it's the way he was. He endeared himself immediately to this community by not only, you know, being a part of the university, but having such an interest in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, just great. So that's my donation.
Okay. I do too. Mm-hmm. So I just made a list of people to see if you had any comments on your work with any of these people or.
Well, I think Bill Goeing, William Goeing. Have you talked to him?
Yes, mm-hmm. I have.
Well, he is one of the. He was the real one of the movers, and he. For a while, it looked as though we were going to be in Alton and sort of a extra high school. And Bill Goeing had a good deal in making it into a real university.
How did you happen to come to SIU?
Well, I was teaching at Allegheny College in Meadville, Pennsylvania. I'm quite happy there, but it looked interesting, starting a new place.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I just wonder, how did you feel as a young mathematician in the 50s? Did you?
I don't know.
Did you feel that you were going to change the world? Or?
No, I didn't. as I said, I was quite happy at Allegheny College, and I was there for about 10 years before coming
uh-huh.
here. Now I was involved, of course, in the bond issue election. Several of us went around talking, telling why we needed the bond issue.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to groups of farmers up in north of Alton, and to other people. And in most cases, people were receptive to the idea of having a new campus here.
Mm-hmm.
But some people thought it was just a waste.
Really?
A waste of state money. And one of the interesting things was in the in the president, Dwight Morris, you've got him here listed. He had great ideas for
mm-hmm.
SIU. In fact, it was said that the sun never sets on SIU. And at that time, I was heading up a project in Mali, in West Africa.
That's right. That's
what I wanted. We had two people working on appropriate housing for people in tropical countries in Nigeria. He had a team in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. Training people to teach shop work and that sort of thing. Which in India and Afghanistan, the schools were all modeled on the English, typical mm-hmm. English preparatory school, mm-hmm. and he was giving them in Afghanistan, and then in Nepal, we were giving them the more practical mm-hmm. working with electricity, mechanical mm-hmm. things. And then we had two teams in Vietnam. One was training elementary school teachers, and the other one was teaching people how to repair broken down vehicles.
Okay.
They had a lot of old trucks and things in Vietnam, and then how to fix them up so they could be going.
Good.
And I think that, I don't think we had anything further east of that. But
in Mali, you were involved with secondary education in mathematics? Or?
No.
No,
I was just involved in the general education system. And training teachers.
In general, training them?
Yes.
Okay. And you were there 2 years, weren't you? Or
let's see, I guess 2.5 years. Oh. And then I was 1.5 years in Nepal, roughly the same sort of thing.
Training teachers.
Yes. So,
did you? I had a very brief experience as a Fulbright lecturer in Colombia in 1983, and I think it really, I think traveling in other countries really changes your view of the world dramatically.
Yes.
So I wondered how your view was when you came back. Did you have a lot of?
I don't know. There's a lot of changes. I'd been involved back before the war, working for I'm trying to think of the name of the organization I worked for. It was we took youngsters in the summertime to spend the summer in France living with French families and doing everything in uh-huh. French or in German. We had other countries we did it in too. And so that was part of my background.
Doing that?
Five summers, uh-huh. taking groups of mostly high school youngsters. Mm-hmm. And yes, we had the Donald Watt, who started all this business of living in the French families and or German families or mm-hmm. Norwegian families, whatever. And he exchanged in the next summer, the German youngster, the French youngster, would come and live with the American mm-hmm. family for the summer.
That's nice.
And he felt if Hitler and Mussolini and Churchill and Daladier and so on had all done this, mm-hmm. had this experience, we wouldn't have had the war.
You know. Well, how did you find the students in this new university where you came to work?
Here?
Yes, compared to other students that you had encountered.
I don't know. Well, the Allegheny College had been around for over 100 years.
Yes.
So it was a, sort of more of an established thing. But it was here, it was brand new.
Uh-huh.
And, I don't think there's any difference in the ability of the students. We had students in Alton who had jobs during the daytime and came in the evening for the classes. And that was a little different, but they were much more serious about what they were doing than some of the younger people were. I don't know.
Did you like working on the campus in Alton?
Yes, I enjoyed it. It was, well, there were some problems. Shirtliff College had not had any, it was broke. none of the blackboards worked very well. And it knit holes in the
thing. Oh, dear.
And in fact, when I had a big class, I didn't use the blackboard because they couldn't read what I'd written on it anyway. And I had these light projector things, which the students didn't like at all. But at least I was using the projector to give them some pictures of things I would have put on my blackboard. But I enjoyed the teaching there.
Do you remember moving into the new campus?
No, I was overseas.
That's right, you were in Mali, right? So did you come back and have an office? Or?
Yes, I came back and fitted in, I hope.
Was it in the Peck building, your original office?
No, it was in the math science building.
Okay. Yes, it was completed in, the first part was completed in 66, opened in the winter, I think, 60.
Yes, well, I guess it was.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but I do remember coming back. I do it. I remember. It was completed. But I don't know what other interesting things happening on the campus.
No one else has mentioned this international. I have it in my notes, but no one has mentioned this international emphasis of Delight Morris as thoroughly as you have.
Yes.
It's a very useful.
Yes. Well, he was just delighted when he could go around the world and have a SIU team to stop with.
Oh, yeah. I've asked other people, did you think he was a person who was listening?
Morris?
Yes.
I think so. When he made that round-the-world trip, visiting SIU all the way, when he came to Mali, he had been invited by the Malian government to come to the... They were opening a new airport at Timbuktu, a new school. There were several new things happening at Timbuktu. And he was the only one invited to this inauguration. Mm-hmm. Who wasn't head of state. Now what happened was, of course, they invited the president of France to come, they'd send have the French ambassador to Mali do it. And he was invited as the head of SIU.
That's impressive. That's interesting.
And he didn't speak any French. So I introduced...
That's what I was going to say, you.
I introduced him to the Israeli ambassador to Mali. And the Israeli ambassador... I wasn't allowed to go to this big several-day meeting on celebrating the opening of the airport and the war memorial. There wasn't any war, but they had a war memorial. And so on. And the Israeli ambassador sort of took numbers with him, translated for him.
He'd like to
visit Rome, get around and see what was going on.
Did you see much of him when he was on campus here?
Did you
go down to Carbondale?
Oh yes, we had faculty meetings, and a group of faculty from here would go down to Carbondale. And he talked to us and so forth, you know, down there. Sometimes we had a meeting halfway between here. I think it was Mascuda.
Oh, yes, I know Mascuda. I've done political work there.
Yeah. Well, it was a restaurant we met there. And the people from Carbondale came up, and we went down there to have monthly meetings.
It wasn't the Derrick, was it? No, the
what?
Derrick? Something called the Derrick? No, that's later, I guess. But anyway. What is your view of what happened to Harold C?
Well, you have these two very strong people, Morris and C.
Yes.
And C came here originally, you know, to a group of people from some Granite City, some from Alton, thought we should have a branch, some sort of college. Shurtleff College was closing down. Mm-hmm. And the Shurtleff College was running out of money. Mm-hmm. A group of business people from Alton offered to raise the money to keep Shurtleff going if a bunch of them could be on the board.
Oh.
And this was a Baptist college, and so they couldn't have any businessmen on the board. And Shurtleff turned it down. At that point, Shurtleff faded away in the distance. And we took it over. But, of course, Morris was the one, I guess. I don't know if it was Morris or C who had the idea of getting
into Shurtleff.
But if C had done it, it would have been a separate university. And Morris wanted to keep it under his name.
Well, what sort
of... They were both, I liked both of them. They were both great people. I mean, you got two great people.
Yes. Did you keep in touch with Harold C. after he left?
Not really very much. No. Occasionally. I don't know where he went now.
He went to South Carolina.
Oh, is that
yes.
Mm-hmm.
First he went again overseas to Burma, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He had a position at Carbondale.
Yes.
So. Did you know John Rendleman?
Not very well.
Not very well.
No. He was. I think things continued just the way they had been, as far as I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I know what Earl Lazarson was in your department.
Yes, he was in math, and then he became dean of science. And they're not made over to be a president. I'm looking at some of your questions here.
It seemed to me that you were in the papers, you emerge. I hadn't met you when I was reading through the papers. In the papers, you emerge as you are someone who seemed to be always at the meetings and always a voice. And definitely with Larry McEnany, the two of you were really leaders. You went to the retreats and you had ideas about honors and different.
Some of that, so far back, I've forgotten it. But
do you remember McVicker?
Yes.
Yes,
he went on to become a president of a college out in
Oregon State.
Oregon, yes. But, well, I didn't. He was all right, but I. We had a very intelligent woman in the math department who had a lot of administrative ability, actually, I felt. And we wanted her to become dean of, I don't know, the dean or what it was, of the science. And McVicker turned it down. He didn't think, oh, we wanted her to be a full professor.
Yes.
He didn't think women should be full professors.
Oh, dear.
Then he went up. He went out to Harvard. Yeah.
Yes, I remember her. I have her name in my notes. She left. The woman did. Wasn't she from Washington University with a PhD in math or something like that?
Yes.
Or was she?
She had a PhD from Harvard.
Yes.
And her husband was teaching at Washington.
Okay, that's what I remember then.
Yes. And she then went on to teach at the, what do they call it, UMSL?
Yes.
And she became, she was chairman of the department. And yes, we messed up on that. We should have kept her.
Yes. There was a woman in geography, too, in those early years who left. I can't, remember her, okay. Marion Taylor was on the faculty. I'm trying to think of some of the women. She was in English. Mm-hmm. Weren't too many women. Carol Keene came in 1968.
Yes. Here you have influence of previous experiences, World War II participation, and so on. In World War II, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, of course, got us into it.
Yes.
And Congress decided we need more anti-aircraft. So, and the next thing would be they'd be bombing the capital of Washington. Mm-hmm. And some of us felt that would have been a good thing. But I was drafted into the anti-aircraft, and then they obviously didn't need much anti-aircraft, so I ended up in the infantry. But, I had a job for a while in Morocco, reading other people's mail, that is, German prisoner of war mail.
A censor, I hear.
I was a censor, a mail censor. And then I just found myself in the infantry. And, when they landed in the 7th Army, landed in southern France, my job was liaison with the French underground. That was a lot of fun.
Yes.
I met up a lot of interesting people that way. So that's pretty much my World War II participation. And then about 6 months, occupation of Germany, trying to get Germany back on its feet. Mm-hmm. So that, at least locally, to get them moving again.
Mm-hmm. Do you speak German also?
Yeah, I went to school there for 1 year. I spent, was it, 3 or 4 summers in France before the war.
Mm-hmm. So did you plan to be a professor after the war? Did you?
Well,
use the GI Bill for your graduate.
I was interested in teaching. My first teaching jobs were in secondary school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have here, how do you perceive the relationship between the university and the larger community in the southwestern Illinois? Just how to read. Well, one thing I noticed here was I had, back from the beginning, evening classes.
Yes.
These were all people who had full-time jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not the usual university.
No.
And they were some of my best students, people who... And they got a degree, or some certain number of courses at the university, they'd get a promotion. Granite City Steel or wherever they were working.
Right.
So, I don't know of anything else here.
Did you ever teach in East St. Louis?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we took over the high school there.
Yes.
Delight Morris had arranged it, so he paid the... it's a high school that had been... considered unsafe or should be demolished or something. But he rented it for $1 the first year. And we had classes in it. And they fixed it up, the plumbing, fixed up plumbing and the things that didn't work. And so it was a really nice building. And the second year, he said he'd like to have it again. And they the people in East St. Louis who controlled the high school saw the school was really beautiful, in beautiful shape. It had been a very run-down building before. And they wanted to charge, you know, thousands of dollars for the rental. And Morris said, well, he didn't see that, but he said he doubled it. He was paying $2 to rent the building. I don't know how long we had that building for $2 a year rent. But because what had happened, the people who ran the high school board or whatever it was, found they were going to build a new one. They thought the old one was too decrepit, and instead of fixing up the old one. So that's made it available for us. And they built a new high, I don't know where they built this new high school, but it gave us a nice place to teach. And they were very disappointed when they didn't get more money.
Did you live in Alton then, or in
Everett? I lived in Alton first. And then when they finished the new campus.
Yes, after you came back from Mali, is that when you moved?
Yes.
That was about 1966. Yeah. I think that's what I noted about your time.
So I think it was we built this house in 63. They built it, had it built.
Well,
the relation between university and the larger community, I think as I said before, having the university here, people working full time,
uh-huh.
taking evening courses and so on, it did make a difference to the community, I guess.
When you came back from Mali, there were a lot of social movements going on at that time. Were you on the campus when the African American students began protesting against local racism and having sit-ins and
I don't remember that.
Okay, okay. And when the students were killed at Kent State in 1970.
Remember that. Uh-huh.
Were you at any of those convocations or?
No. Don't think so.
Okay.
I was in Mali and working with black people.
Yes.
I mean, it's for us it's an experience being the only white person in a group of black
yes.
people.
Yes.
Developing a school system and so forth. I got a summer feeling for a black person who's in the same situation with us.
Yes, so you could sort of understand. My sister was in the Peace Corps in Ghana during that same period, about the same years you were in Mali.
Oh, good.
Okay. She used to write me and ask me about Malcolm X and
Was she a teacher? Or?
Yes, she was a teacher. She studied Twi, which was the dialect in Yasikan where she was.
Oh,
but she she taught English, which was the bureaucratic language.
Yes.
So she taught.
Well, the official language in those countries is either French or English, mostly. And we were teaching people English, and it wasn't so they could talk to Americans or to English people. They could talk to Nigerians or Ghanaians who spoke English.
Yes, as lingua franca.
They had English as their official language.
But
so,
when did you retire from the university? In the 80s? Larry McEnany retired, I believe, in 1986.
Well, I probably, gosh, I can't remember when I retired. I was 69, I think, which means 69, about 83.
Uh-huh.
I think it's about 83. Okay. When did Larry McEnany?
I think it was 86 or 87. Maybe 86.
He was a little younger than I was.
Uh-huh. He had a heart problem, so he thought he should retire early, and then he's still going very strongly.
I didn't know that. Yes, I shared an office with him for a couple of years when on the Alton campus.
Did you know Sam Pearson or any of the other early, or Stanley Kimball?
Stan Kimball. Uh-huh. Yeah, he's a great guy. We had in Alton, those early years, I was put in charge of I had about $50,000 each year for people who were doing research. And I doled it out to people. And I got to know Stan Kimball, for instance. He was collecting all the stuff about Mormons.
Yes.
he used up most of the money I had for these various research projects.
Sort of famous for that.
Yes.
He was in my department. I also noted that he took a lot of students to Europe in those early days.
Oh, he did?
He would take them to Germany. And
yes.
Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
Behind the Iron Curtain.
Yes, yes.
Still did that. So you were kind of a founder of the graduate school then, if you
yes,
were.
Yes, I was. Uh-huh. I was assistant dean. The dean was at Carbondale, you see.
Yes.
We were borrowing everything from Carbondale. And so I was the assistant dean of the graduate school. Trying to think of anything else that was going on there.
Well, did you know everyone on the faculty in those days, pretty much?
Oh, I guess so. I don't know how well I knew them, but faculty wasn't that big.
Uh-huh, right, that's right. Got it.
That first early days, we were occupying that one street. I can't remember what its name was now. It ran east from the Shirtlift campus.
Uh-huh.
And about a lot of the houses along that street, offices.
Oh, that's College Avenue? Was it College Avenue? No.
No, it was next
door. Next door, okay.
I don't remember now what it was.
Leverett Lane. I'm trying to think of streets in that neighborhood.
And I remember the graduate office was just one of these, those houses, all three houses. And, we had another house, which was the mathematics house, and another house for English, and I don't know what it was. It's just the houses that people had been living in.
So I was up there a few weeks ago to interview someone at the dental school. Boy, that, and we used to live on College Avenue in Alton when we first came.
Yes.
So, well, but it's really changed. The dental school has expanded.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, we lived on College Avenue for the first year we were there. Uh-huh. It was in a house going west on College Avenue. It was the second house from the corner of the campus, just across the street,
yes,
from the church.
Uh-huh.
It's just great because you
just walk to work.
Walk to work and 2 minutes. And then we had a house the other direction. I don't remember something. Well, this house we had was not too good a house. Roof leaked a lot.
Oh dear.
We were renting. And we bought a house in the other direction, about a block away from the campus. And it was wonderful being able to walk to your classes and your offices from the, you know, in 3 or 4 minutes, and not having the long drive we have now.
Sure, right.
But, in fact, and here I used to ride my bicycle. It was about 4 miles, and I trailed the old railway right away, and I got out to the campus that way.
I walk. Sometimes I take the bus now, though. It's a few blocks from my house to the bus station, so I just walk to the bus and get dropped off right there.
Where is the bus? Where do you get the bus?
I get it downtown at that building by Jamie Henderson, across from the new county building. My husband calls it the Mussolini Station, but it's downtown. I think it's quite nice, but it's a new kind of new-looking bus station. It's not enclosed.
It's where there used to be an automobile hill there.
Yes, Cassin's used to be there. Right. And it's across from the city hall where Montgomery Ward used to be.
Yes.
Right. But I walk. It's about 4 miles to walk. It takes me about 1 hour and 10 minutes if I'm really helping along. I go up St. Louis Street, and then I have to walk along the road a little bit and then get on the bike trail.
I see.
You must have, since you retired, you must have had some thoughts about the university, or did you just turn your attention to other projects and not think about it, or?
Well, we follow the university, we go to the concerts and plays and things there. But, and for a while I used to go back to the departmental meetings. But become involved in other things. So I don't know what else.
Well, do you think you, if you think of anything else, I could come back and record it?
No, I don't. A new campus opened in Memories of the Buildings. Well, that was fascinating, watching the new buildings go up on the campus. And in the wintertime, it was called Carpenter's Rough there. in the cold.
Yeah. Did you like the architecture? Did you like Gio Obata's?
Yes, I felt it was
building.
There were some things in the science building. There was a room set aside to put some of this big machinery, you know, for copying and so mm-hmm. forth. And they built the room and the doorway and so on. And then they couldn't get the machine. They had to put the machine, had to stay out in the hallway. A special room for it. And some of the roofs leaked in those buildings when they were still pretty
yes,
new.
That's right.
I remember going, had I business from the president, and he had a room up on the third floor in the administration building. And he had a big metal waste basket right next to his deck, and there was a drip coming down.
Drip was going down.
So I thought if we can't afford a good roof, for the president's office, and in the library.
Oh yes, the
they
library.
Were covering all the books with cloth, with yes. some sort of waterproof stuff, because the water was dripping in and on the books.
Yeah.
Well, and then in, I don't know what they call them now, they call them buildings 1 and 2 when I was there.
Uh-huh. They're called alumni and founders.
Those glass roofs, all neat.
Otis design, a lot of changes were made.
Yes.
And some of it involved the construction of the roofs. Mm-hmm. And the engineering company that he wanted to use was not hired by us because John Randall didn't trust him. No. So, did you know John Randall at all?
Very slightly, yes.
Uh-huh. He was our university architect at first.
Well, I know when they were planning the library,
you were.
John Abbott,
uh-huh.
And there were three of us, one of the assistant deans, I think, took a trip to visit newly built college library.
Uh-huh.
We did some interesting, fun traveling. We went up to, we drove up in a university car, John Abbott and one assistant dean, I can't remember. Uh-huh. And I was chairman of the faculty library board, and we were planning the new library. And we went to Michigan State, I don't remember how many other places on the way. Mm-hmm. And then we took a trip to the east. Harvard had built a new undergraduate library, and Princeton had a fairly new library, and so on. We visited all these other places to get ideas on what we needed.
And were they implemented? Were some of them implemented at SIU?
I don't know really how they were. So we made a report on it.
Uh-huh.
At Cornell, the library, you would hear a pin drop. People could be talking, and they had their ceilings at different levels, so it broke up the sound.
Oh.
And so you could have people talking here, and it wouldn't disturb people.
Oh, that's wonderful.
At Princeton, in the main meeting room of the library, when you opened the front of the door, you click, everybody looked up. And the sound was all over the place, and reverberations. And the contrast between some well-built libraries and not so well-built ones. And I would have thought that Princeton would have had better acoustics.
Yes, you would have thought with their funding.
Yes. But we had fun traveling around.
Well, that's probably useful, good for people.
Yes.
To travel together. I know the opening of the library and the art, it looks like it was a wonderful moment when it opened. And Dr. Abbott was really great in building the collections.
Yes.
He really did amazing things.
Well, before Abbott came, we had two librarians, one in Alton and one in St. Louis, and they were fighting each other all the time.
Uh-huh.
The one in Alton had been getting this left over from Shirtliff.
Uh-huh.
And he knew a lot about libraries, but he had never hadn't had any money to do anything with them. So he was a frustrated librarian. And the fellow at East St. Louis didn't know anything about libraries, but thought he did. He spent a lot of money on books that nobody wanted. Some of it was sort of sad and some of it was funny, depending on your point of view.
Did you know Dr. Abbott before he came here?
No.
No, okay.
He came
just wondered.
From,
he was a New Englander.
Yes, but he came from...
From Texas.
From Texas.
From San Antonio.
Yes. And he made a tremendous difference.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well, are there any other... I just threw together this list. Are there any other people that you think of that just ignore this list that were very important in... Did you know David Steinberg when he came?
Yes, just uh-huh. slightly. I didn't know
uh-huh.
very well. Let's see, Kenneth Shore, was that the physicist?
No, he was a basketball player from Edwardsville
oh.
who became...
Oh, I remember, yeah.
And then turned out to be an administrator on his way up.
Yes.
I was really shocked to find out that I have an aunt. I think it's a carpenter aunt, but I'm not afraid of ants. But should I put it in the wastebasket? There.
Well, we live sort of in the woods.
I know.
Woods here.
It's a sign of spring. They're coming in. Oh, what was I saying? Oh, okay, I lost my train of thought there when I saw the ant. Oh, Kenneth Shaw. You know, we were talking about Kenneth Shaw. I was shocked to see that so many of the presidents didn't write any of their speeches. That even at this level of this university, that people have speech writers. That kind of amazed me. But
they did?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Well, John Redmond wrote some of his.
Yes.
Not all, though. Mm. And Kenneth Shaw wrote none of his. And
Earl Lasseter.
He wrote some of his,
Congress,
yes. He wrote his major addresses on the budget.
Yes.
But
well, you know a lot more about this than I do.
But I don't know. I just wondered if that was known in the faculty or not. And I was just a bobo who didn't, when I was a faculty member, didn't know anything, which is true. But.
I don't know what about the university and the larger community.
Do you feel that the faculty had a very significant influence on the shaping of the university?
I think they did had quite a bit of influence.
Do you remember when John Rendleman became president? Were you out of the country then? He became the first president in 1968, when it really was, the idea of having one university was over.
Yes.
And so we split off from Carbondale in many ways, but just wondered. Because then the Faculty Senate here on campus emerged and became, I think, significant. But I guess I'm interested in John Rendleman because there's a sleaze factor there that people bring up with him. But I think he was he established a lot of democratic traditions on the campus. And a lot of, he was very participatory. He expected to approve what the faculty did, and he expected to deal with the unions and these other things that he was involved in, Delight Morris's house and the Paul Powell estate were too bad for him, for his momentum.
I remember a lot of criticism of that house, of Morris's house.
Yes.
But, I stayed over the night there a couple of times. But I'm not sure. I think it was the house he had before that, one that was sort of questionable.
Yeah. It's called Stone House, I think, today, or something like that.
This runway I was over in Mali, and I came back to check up on some things. And, of course, they were sending us books and equipment and so forth.
Yes.
From Carbondale.
Uh-huh.
And I had to check with them and see. They sent us things I thought we needed.
Mm-hmm.
But
and that's when you stayed in Delight Morris's home.
Yes, I stayed. Actually, Delight and his wife were off somewhere else.
Oh. The staff took care of you.
And the staff took care of me. Yeah, it's very well taken care of.
Well, I'm going to be looking more closely over my... I started last year, taking notes on all the presidential archives. So if I look over those things, I might return to you with some questions.
Well, any time, but you seem to know more about it than I do. Well, it's sort of an amusing thing. One of the things we've gotten is a one of these things where you have a person, the teacher, talking into a machine.
Okay.
And you know each student has it on his desk.
Oh my.
A copy of this thing. And I can't remember what the use is. And we had this, an outfit from Chicago that set up one of these things in one of the schools in Bamako, and we were using it, and it didn't work. And we had a group of Israelis there who were working on more or less technical high school they were teaching in, and they were able to put it in, make the thing work perfectly. The guys from Chicago couldn't make it their own machine. But the Israelis did a wonderful job. That was one of the interesting things, was to see the U.S. government wanted the people to work in these technical high schools, and who could speak French.
Uh-huh.
The French is an official language. They couldn't find anybody. A guy who teaches the shop courses and so on in high school, in this country, doesn't speak French. But they went to an outfit called ORT, Organization for Rehabilitation Training, which is was founded by the Jewish people in Russia.
Oh.
So that, because they had difficulty getting along with the Tsarist government, and they had, they felt if they had this practical training for their people,
uh-huh.
they could get jobs. And very often they could, because in Russia there weren't many people with any practical training. and the U.S. government went to them. This ORT, which I think had its headquarters in Greece at that time, and we had quite a group of Israelis in Bamako, we were there, who were working in this technical high school, and they were able to put all this material together and had it working beautifully. The guys from Chicago who were supposed to didn't know how to fix it. But,
who was the American ambassador in Mali at that time?
Gosh,
remember? Did you see much of?
I can't remember now.
Okay.
No, I'm afraid I'm not very good at names. I do remember this, that when they'd have a meeting of the ambassadors, some celebration going on, the president of the country would ride up in a very fancy limousine. The American ambassador had a beat-up old Dodge. And the ambassador from Ghana or from one of the other neighboring states, they all had Peugeots or Mercedes, or something like that. And, there was the American ambassador.
Beat up. Well, maybe that was a symbol of his power in Mali.
Yes,
in
I guess so.
Politics there.
Yes.
Well, just to conclude this, what would you say was your most significant experience teaching at SIUE, or being on the faculty?
Teaching it here or?
Anywhere. I mean, just during those years. It sounds like the time in Mali was really for you a great moment of your life, a really significant feature of it.
Well, I was, in a sense, I was helping to train teachers. I went around visiting schools,
uh-huh.
and
you haven't said much about Nepal either, but
Nepal was, of course, right. Devon English was the official language there, and it was like a technical school to train people to teach in the regular high schools there to teach shop work, electric.
Okay, yes, yeah,
practical things. Mm-hmm. And we did some teaching like that. In Nepal, most of the teachers are Brahmins.
Okay.
Brahmin cannot touch a metal instrument.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that.
And it's amusing. This one fellow is a Brahmin, and he was teaching a course in how to use a shovel and how to plant things and so forth. But he had to have someone else do it for him.
Oh,
and he explained what the guy was doing. Uh-huh. Because he couldn't touch a shovel.
That's really interesting.
Well, I was there. We had some celebration opening up a new branch of this school. And at the meeting, I had to hand a plaque to the headmaster of the school. And there were several people between us in this, and they were sitting down in the rows. And I handed it this way with one hand. This is insulting.
Oh.
You should have handed both hands.
Oh, you have to hand things with both hands. Oh, dear.
This means you're inferior to me. This is
something
for you.
Uh-huh.
If you both hands, why?
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I insulted the
the
headmaster of the school.
That's a wonderful example of cultural difference.
Yeah. Well, Nepal was pretty well anglicized, mm-hmm. and so it was somewhat different from Mali in that sense. Much more sophisticated. And lovely countryside, of course.
Yes.
It's right there in the mountains.
We have a little connection to Nepal now with our geography department.
Oh.
Does, I can't remember what the project is there. Maybe something, some kind of a water survey or something that they're doing there.
That's interesting because when we were out there, my daughter, who was interested in overseas things, came out to stay with us, and she and some of the Peace Corps youngsters were doing just that, a water survey for pieces in Nepal that were fairly remote from any other center, and the problem of the nearest spring or well, and the problem of getting it to the village, getting the water to the village. And so she was busy on that with several of the Peace Corps youngsters.
Well, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you were expecting me to ask? Or?
No, I don't think so. I'm fairly straightforward what I'm doing.
Okay.
And what these people were doing.
It's...
faculty member.
Excuse me, dear. Did you talk about the Dean's College?
No.
That's an excellent. An excellent.
Did you?
Yes, I'd like to hear about the Dean's College if you.
Well, when.
Thanks.
When we came back from Mali, had the idea of the dean, because they were going to get the deans of the various departments, of the various divisions, and have them supervise some students who could have different programs that other students did. And the deans, and I think it was, not Wilson Randleman, which of these people had the idea? And I had just come back from Africa, and so they asked me to try it out. And so I got people who had extremely high grades in high school, and whose teachers recommended them highly, and let them work out. We worked out special programs for them, where they skipped freshman English, for instance, and other freshman classes, and they could take them a little more complicated program. And I came back just to time to be in charge of that, and that was, I found, quite interesting. And I led a lot of very bright students.
Yes. How many years did you do that?
I can't
remember. It was in the 70s, I guess.
Let's see.
Were the late 60s.
Yes. It was in the 70s.
That's right.
And I don't know who's taking charge of it now. But,
now it's part of the College of Arts and Sciences.
Oh, I see.
It doesn't have a separate dean.
Yes. Well, that's...
People have advisors.
Yes.
Oh, within that.
Well, I was... The students I was working with were considered bright enough to
fly on their own,
do something, not to have to do all the things that the average student did. And
how many were there, do you remember, when you started?
I really remember. Because I had maybe running for a year, and then I went to Nepal for a year and a half. And so then when I came back, I can't remember if I took it over again or not. But, it was a chance to have slightly different programs for a student who's good in a certain area, or maybe good overall. But, it wasn't such a terrific deal. Is it still going on?
Yes, I believe it is. Yeah. They're changing general studies again to have a freshman seminar for all freshmen.
Yeah, but this doesn't fit all freshmen.
No. They still have, now they have Dean's College courses within the College of Arts and Sciences, where honored students take small classes together.
I see.
That's how it's evolved.
Great, yes. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think it's still going on.
No.
I sort of dropped out of all kinds of academic programming and things about 2 years ago. I'm semi-retired.
Yes.
I teach a couple classes in the fall.
Oh, good.
And then I'm working on this. I had some students who were in that Dean's College.
Yes.
And they had special seminars for them.
Yes. Are the deans doing anything about it? They don't have, they had nothing to do with it when I was...
Oh, yes. Well, in the College of Arts and Sciences, there's a dean and two associate deans.
Yes.
One of the, Carl Springer, have you met him?
No.
Well, he's a classicist, really, and very witty and wonderful, and he's taught some special classes in it. So, yes, the deans are involved.
Oh, that's good.
And the other associate dean, the one who handles the money, is a woman,
yes.
Wendy Shaw. She's British,
yes.
And she has done a special class, too.
I see.
So the deans, yes, they are involved.
I see.
But I don't know about the dean. I can't speak about the dean of business or the dean of nursing or the dean of the School of Education,
yes.
How that is. Yes. And we have the new College of Pharmacy.
Yes,
now,
of course that's it.
With its own dean. And no science building practically left, no. It's in very bad shape. You probably heard about that. I can
no.
turn this on.
No. Yeah, administration building, a lot of it's in it.
It's fixed,
it's fixed.
Too, yes.
Well, that's interesting.
And the University Center has been renovated.
Yes.
But the science building was deferred probably at a time when it might better have been
mm-hmm.
not deferred. But the dormitories are all built with student fees
mm-hmm.
and bonds.
Yes.
But the science building has to be a state appropriation.
Yes.
So
well, they have the basement used to be engineering, and now they have their own building.
Yes, that new building.
What's happening now in the basement?
Well, I was just interviewing Richard Brugem. He's in biology. He's an ecologist who has made the campus into kind of his research lab, so I wanted to interview him about things.
Yes.
And he has an office down the basement now.
Yes.
Because he was chair and then
yes.
he fell to the basement.
Yes.
But so there are offices down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Center for Teachers of Science is down there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, and that's what I know is, I don't know what else is down there anymore. They have computer labs in all the buildings.
Oh, yes.
So science has several of those.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have computers, and did you have a computer in 1983 before you retired?
Yes. Well, no, I didn't have. Well, let's see, we did have the first. Well, we had a computer room in the math
uh-huh.
department. But before that, the first appearance of computers was the chemist on the second
uh-huh.
floor of the building had a room which was just a computer room.
Uh-huh.
And we other people who weren't chemists were allowed to use them. And I used it in one of my statistics classes. I had just next door to this the computer room.
Uh-huh.
And I take half and give it to somebody to keep him busy. And take the other half to the computer room, and we'd be connecting up. First, we had to connect up by telephone to a computer in Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
That was the nearest one, apparently. And we did simple problems for this thing in Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
Then I'd get a few of the students to know what they were doing. I'd leave them there and go back and teach the class.
Uh-huh.
And that was when, I guess that was in the 70s. I don't remember when we first started having computers.
I think it was the 70s. Right, early 70s. Did you know, I just thought of his name now. I can't think, I'm like you, I can't think of the names. But the man from Carbondale, who, Harvey Fisher, did you know him at all?
No.
No, okay. He was involved in the buildings at SIU. He was a kind of liaison between faculty,
mm-hmm,
and the engineers and
yes,
so forth. But you probably were gone. He was,
yes,
very active. He was a biologist.
What was his name?
Harvey Fisher.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Was he at Carbondale?
Yes, at Carbondale.
Yeah, I think I was on some committee or something.
Uh-huh, that's what I... And he wrote wonderful memos, mm-hmm, about things, I remember. There's a whole series of them in the in the files about the buildings and the,
yes,
and what the faculty wanted for the different,
yeah,
buildings.
And I can remember we had one room set aside for computers. Where was it? It was in the communications building, I think. This is the first,
uh-huh,
beginning of computers.
Yes.
And you had to have a card. You had,
uh-huh,
punch holes in it.
Uh-huh.
And you put it in the machine, and they'd come back and tell you you'd made a mistake. But, it was quite a long, tedious thing to do any sort of computing there.
Well, as I...
What's his name? Delight. It was a terrific visionary in buying the amount of land that,
yes,
he did. It was a wonderful thing to do, and I think there were eyebrows raised about, you know, buying all that land, but it was certainly a great thing to do, and his was a good idea.
Did I talk about that?
No, you didn't.
Well, I
you
should
didn't
have.
Mention it.
Because what had happened is that the... Back in the 30s, the Depression, the SIU at Carbondale, that was SIU then,
yes,
had sold off a lot of the land it owned.
Oh dear,
to,
I didn't know that.
To raise money to keep going, uh-huh, during the Depression. And then in the 40s, late 40s or early 50s, they were very sorry they'd done that, because,
uh-huh,
the land, they could buy the land back at twice the price.
Yes.
And if they wouldn't want to put up new buildings. So Morris was very careful when he got here to buy enough land so they'd have plenty to,
mm-hmm,
expand.
You know, some of the property was... what do they call it? Eminent domain, which is being abused now, of course, apparently,
yes,
in some places. But it was interesting because I think one of the people that had the biggest property And that was really all for it. We're the Rorcasters. We're Bill and Dolores Rorcasters.
Yes.
They were very generous. I mean, very reasonable and agreeable, which some people with smaller properties seem to have a problem.
Uh-huh. Yes, I've interviewed George Arnold and Dolores Rorcasters. Uh-huh. We had lunch one day, and then I invited them to come over to my house so I could tape record an interview
good.
With them.
But I'm awfully glad.
We got,
yeah,
they're coming. They're coming next Wednesday afternoon.
Well, I really, you know, I thought that was excellent.
And she was a kind of unusual woman too, I think, with her degree in architecture and being a businesswoman and so forth.
Yes.
You know, the land is still really beautiful. It's probably in the future every inch will be used.
I'm a tree hugger myself. I just get so thrilled. Now when you go in, you know, they have the trees all planted there in the median between the roads. It's just, I just love it.
That was David Warder. Because the original.
There's a guy named Ed Hume.
Yes, he was the original landscape architect.
He was great. There's a lot of trees out there from the Mudge Farm, which Dick was happy to take and thin out the trees. But anyway, there are some plantings from there, some from the evergreens.
Oh, really?
As you drive in.
As we drive in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe I'll mention that. Where was the Mudge Farm?
It's still there. My own family, my Mudge family, have sold. We have no interest, no financial interest in it. Although we do, there's a family cemetery there that we are have legal right to use if we wish to. Mm-hmm. It's a mile east of Grant Park, Illinois.
Okay. Yes, I think we.
It was 530 acres.
On the way out to Diamond Mineral Springs.
Yeah, it's a mile from there. Yeah, that's got a history too.
Yes.
But anyway, doesn't everything?
No, everything does. Yeah,
we don't have any interest in the farm. Mm-hmm. We had a small family corporation. I'm still dealing with. It's just a holding company, basically. In 2002, I think, is when one of the owners, Bobby Mudge, sold his interest to Mark, his 18th interest to Mark Grinter. And then after a while, in 2002, my family pulled out. And it's Greg, Bill, and Steve Mudge. And Mark Grinter, I don't know what's happened. Maybe Mark sold his interest, I don't know. But the Steve would be the authority, or Bill Mudge would be the authority, so we don't have any,
Mr. Hume took some trees from your farm and transplanted them.
Dick was also loved trees, and there was a state, or I think it was a state program in which they planted lots of tree evergreens out there. And so then Ed Hume, Dick was delighted for him to have some of those trees and got them. So Bill, I don't know if Bill, because they were just kids growing up then, I don't know if they remember, but I would imagine they do, I don't know. But anyway. No, the thing is, it was funny, Ellen, I was hanging on to this mainly for my children who are spread out. But I was talking to my daughter, Susie, who's the best money manager, about handling it, because I was getting tired of doing that, dealing with it. And I said, well, Susie, I'm just going to turn this over to you. She said, I don't want it. I thought, okay.
That's it.
So they really, really weren't interested in carrying on.
Well, I know you established a lecture series.
For Dick, yes.
At the university.
Yeah. For a while. I think it's kind of dissipated. It's kind of ended. In fact, we had a guy.
I went to each one of those.
Gerald Early. Do you remember him?
Yes.
He's just writing now for an article I noticed in the Nation magazine.
Yeah, we subscribe to the Nation. I'll have to find it.
Yeah, it's a recent, really recent one. Mm-hmm. And, and the guy from the Poverty Law Center, what was his name?
Morris D.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Uh-huh. And remember they had to have metal detectors when he came.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, all these right-wing people want to kill him.
Yeah, he had last threats on his life. It's just really incredible.
Yeah. Well, I think we're about through here for.
I mean, some people were against it, but we just were thrilled with the whole idea. And I think it's been boom. Although I'm not happy about the community explosion.
Oh, explosion, the suburbanization of the area.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's amazing. Susie is in the archives, music archives at Indiana U.
Oh, is
in
she?
Bloomington.
Uh-huh.
And she said Bloomington is growing, but she said nothing like this. She's just... Uh-huh. Aghast at the, and I guess it's not over,
No.
It's still going. So that Tommy, my son Tommy, tells me Deerbergs is just wonderful. He said, I will love it. So we'll see.
We try to keep Market Basket alive in town.
Oh, we do.
We go to Market Basket.
Yeah. No, I remember that guy when he started out with a truck.
Oh, you do?
The owner.
Yeah,
the
maybe
owner
I'll keep
that.
Recording this.
No, he just had a truck and was selling things from his truck. Now, he's not running it now. I assume it's a son that is.
Probably.
But anyway, then he built a little building, and then he built a bigger building. Mm-hmm. So his is quite a success story. I think it's great, too.
Yeah.
No, it's so convenient. He's got a great location there.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well,